Listen up, all you golfers out there. You need to take a short drive to Acorns Golf Links. The family-owned and operated facility is located just 20 minutes from the JB Bridge. Once you arrive at Acorns, it's obvious it's more than just a top-notch golf experience. It's your chance to get away from the hustle and bustle of your daily routine. You'll notice over 65 identified bird species, rolling countryside, and a beautiful park-like setting. The Acorns experience is unmatched in value in the St. Louis area. Visit acornsgolflinks.com for more details and tee times.
Rise and shine, St. Louis. It's the Ryan Kelly Morning After with Tim McKernan, Jimmy the Cat Hayes, and Doug Vaughn. It's time to start your day off right. Now, here's Tim, Jim, and Doug live from the Gateway Buick GMC Studios on CBS Sports, 105.7 HD2 FM, 920 AM, and InsideSTL.com.
7:05 in St. Louis. You are listening to the Ryan Kelly Morning After on CBS Sports 105.7 HD2 FM 920 AM and InsideSTL.com live from the Gateway Buick GMC Studios. Today on the road at Llewellyn's Pub in Soulard, Jackie Papers for hashtag opening day STL. I just called the home opener, though, because opening day was last Sunday in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, but this is opening day for St. Louis. This is a totally different animal. And, Doug, I could be wrong because I've been away, but it seems to me just driving in, Cardinal Nation is full of glee.
Well, I haven't seen much of Cardinal Nation yet this morning. It's raining out there now. I didn't see much
action. When I was driving in, people were clad in red, waving.
Oh, they weren't.
Yeah, sure.
Where?
Sure they were.
Where? 44.
Soulard.
All of them clad in red.
Yep.
All right. I haven't seen it. It's raining. A little damp out there right now.
Now, I've been monitoring this forecast for a few days, which speaks to how exciting my life is. And I'm pleased to report that while it is raining and there's a nape in the air, it will be, per weather.com, Doug, no precipitation projected for St. Louis beginning at 2 p.m. and none all the way through 10 p.m. So how about that? So that's kind of a nice deal that this rain, 100% chance of precipitation through 10 a.m., should dissipate. According to weather.com at 2 p.m., I don't know, but I'm giving you what I see.
Right.
Okay?
You sound really smart when you say words like dissipate.
Yeah, no, that's the
nape.
UI finest high school west of the Mississippi.
Also, nape.
Yeah.
And then it's not supposed to rain again all week, Tim.
I know. The weather is the bee's knees.
And this bad forecast was hanging out like a dark cloud over the opening day festivities. But we catch a break, Doug. And there'll be a 3-hour pregame.
And this is on Camo.
Fox Sports Midwest, a 3-hour pregame starting at noon. So if you can't make it to the ballpark, we're going to have all the festivities. Joe Mather will not be there. I'm going to try not to get in the way. And we'll have all that and a bunch of interviews with the Cardinal Hall of Famers. And maybe some fans will get to speak and share the fact that they are full of glee.
Wow. Well, Channel 4 has a nice little booth set up as well out there in the Tums lot beyond right field.
Oh, outside the stadium.
Well, yeah, for the people before, for the pregame
festivities. I'm going to be inside the stadium.
Well, but the fans won't be then.
I'm going to be inside the stadium.
I like to get the local color. Is that what they call it?
Yeah, the flair color.
Flavor, flavor.
Flavor, Flav. We'll have quite a bit of that.
Flavor, Flav. Chuck D, what do you think of Terminator X?
I don't know.
Didn't really do much.
I don't know. I just repeated something I'd heard, Tim. I don't know anything about it.
Doug, you know if there's one thing that defines me, it's controversy, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to do something that I've never done before. I'm going to award a spirit win to the opposition. That 3-game series in Atlanta, I'm giving the Braves 3 spirit wins because they competed. That was a back-and-forth affair. And sure, they battled. Luckily, our boys got the best of them. But, boy, that bodes well for the future of the Braves.
I'm not sure I've ever seen a team just kind of hang it up in the first week of the season.
Doug, you like to focus on, what is that run differential?
Yeah.
They're 5 games into their season, and they're enjoying a minus 21 run differential.
Oh, man. We got a good ball club. They got a bad ball club. They got bad pitching. They got bad defense.
It's just, I mean, a couple of things needing tightening up. I mean, the wild pitches, the tons of walks, the balls just dropping inexplicably in front of outfielders. And even if you, like our old friend A.J. Przinsky, great guy, but body language, it looked to me like he was like, eh.
I got 6 months more to deal with that.
I don't know if Freddy Gonzalez makes it through, even though I don't know if it's his fault.
Oh, gosh, no. I don't think you can blame him. It looked like, just watching on TV, it looked like the place was a little dark. The outfield looked dark. Did you get that sense there at the stadium?
No.
When Markakis was running around in right field with no clue where the ball was, it looked like he was out in the shadow somewhere.
That would be a nice little Sports Sunday feature on the lights.
Yeah, they won't even turn the lights on anymore.
Yeah, because it's the last go-round for the Cardinals at Turner Field. Maybe you pitch that idea because it seems important and do like an expose.
That would be fun. That would be fun. Did you have to do a Sports Sunday lesson?
No.
Oh, blessed.
No, I didn't. But I was there most of the day, of course, doing a little thing called journalism.
What were you doing?
Hot takes.
Oh, I did a little thing on the – I went on my master's rant.
What was your rant about?
You know, about the azaleas and everything. I've had enough. I frankly had enough of it.
So did Spieth.
Yeah.
Doug, on the Get Tinted STL Captain's Log today. Tim McCarver, the Hall of Fame Cardinal broadcaster, with us at 8 o'clock. At 8:30, Derek Gould, a regular here on the program throughout baseball season and the co-host of the Writer's Block and, of course, the Post-Dispatch Cardinal beat reporter. And at 9 o'clock, don't forget that starting on Wednesday, and of course it's perfect for St. Louis and Chicago, at 8:30, but probably more like 8:45, the puck will drop on the playoffs, and Doug Armstrong will be with us, the Blues GM, at 9 o'clock, our Maggie O'Brien's hockey report. There is your Get Tinted STL Captain's Log. Text in as we broadcast live from the Wellens Pub in Soulard. Come on now. They open the doors at 9 o'clock, 314-880-0808, 314-880-0808. You can get involved on this program. You can participate in the program by calling in the appliances kind of phone lines, 314-880-0808. Boys, I mean, you got the Cardinals sweeping the Braves. You got the Blues taking on the Blackhawks. You've got the Masters. I know it's a blasphemy and it lights up the text inbox. But the Warriors tying the 1996 Bulls with their win in San Antonio last day. Doug, we got a smorgasbord?
Feels like it, yeah. But don't you think the Cardinals are the lead story here in St. Louis?
I guess so. Of course. I don't know. I'm actually more at this particular moment most intrigued by what took place in Augusta yesterday, but I also recognize that probably in St. Louis with a home opener, most people are intrigued by that. And then in 2 days, I will be most intrigued by the Blues and Blackhawks.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a progression.
Okay.
It's a progression.
And then nationally, I would say most people are interested in the Warriors. Maybe the Masters.
If you want to recap that Azalea rant, give us some of the...
Do you have a hot take?
Because those things are good.
Here
those things are good.
Times.
But those things are good. So give us a couple of highlights.
No.
Please.
You've heard it 100 times. The azaleas in Butler's cabin. And oh, there's Ray's Creek. Oh, let's take a drive up Magnolia. Stop.
Ooh,
stop it. That was about it. I've done it so many times, I'm kind of blue in the face.
You know, I'm watching that after the Cardinals won that heated affair.
Yeah, that was heated, wasn't it?
So we get on
the bus.
Would
you say there was 45,000 plus?
I would say better than 50.
Fans have given up on the ball club.
Oh, I disagree, because they might have been small in numbers, but they were full of glee. So they got this Masters app, right, which was a great thing. And so I'm watching it. And then as Spieth makes it to 17 and 18, seeing if he still has a chance to catch the leader, it stopped.
The app blew up on you.
Yeah.
Oh, is that right?
All I know is I saw, so everyone's talking about the quadruple bogey, right? And then, but he...
Bogey 10, bogey 11, quadruple bogey on 12.
And then he birdies, he kind of gets back within striking distance. And
had a birdie putt on 16.
And it would have been and next thing I know, I see he's in the sand somewhere, and then it froze. I couldn't get it back.
Oh, in the sand on 12, probably.
I don't know what they were.
I am. I'm kind of oddly upset about it, which is odd. But I pull for Spieth, and I didn't wager on it yesterday. I felt like there was some big time value on a variety of players. Willett not being one of the people I was interested in. I thought McIlroy and Day were both intriguing because I knew that the scoring should be. Much better than on Friday and Saturday when you had the wins. And then it got to a point, and I was watching ESPN this morning, and Mike, and I saw Mike Golic say this, and I don't have a dog, but he was debating whether or not to go out and walk the dog because it was a five-stroke lead, and it's kind of just like, I'm going to walk the dog, and I'll come back, and I'll watch him get the green jacket. It was that pronounced that he was going to win. And all of a sudden, he just had a total Greg Norman-esque meltdown, except Norman had his in his 40s. here's a kid, really, at 22 years old, just collapse. And he hadn't been striking the ball all that well, yet he still was in the lead by five strokes when he made the turn. And he had been leaving the ball out to the right throughout the course of the week, and in particular the last couple of days when he had a bad closing 17 and 18 on Saturday, and then in 10 and 11, and then it really burned him on 12. And then the second shot, well, I guess the third shot after the drop, was just like something you and I would do, just chunking the ball and right into the creek.
Did you see he said he turned to his caddy and said, "Bud, I think we're collapsing."
Yeah.
Understatement of the moment. I hate to see it that way, too. I'd much rather see somebody, if Spieth isn't going to win, I'd much rather see somebody make a charge and a couple of great shots.
You mean a Sunday charge?
Or a Sunday charge.
Right, but he was
rather
within
than somebody lose the tournament.
But he got himself within he needed a couple of birdies over the final two to tie, right?
Yeah, but I mean, he had a birdie putt to close within one on 16. Even then, though, to birdie 17 or 18, that's highly unlikely. He had bogeyed or double bogeyed 17 and 18. Those were just two tough holes. Yeah, I mean, what took place on 12, you will always remember. Just like 20 years later, you remember Greg Norman. Mm-hmm. And what took place with Nick Faldo winning, another Brit. Danny Willett played very well. I mean, he shot a 67. That's an outstanding round. There were other 67s out there. Paul Casey shot a 67. But Spieth's collapse is what that's going to be remembered for, just like Greg Norman's collapse 20 years earlier, even though that was Nick Faldo's third green jacket. The Spieth collapse is, and I have to say, and we'll see, because Rory McIlroy had a collapse a few years ago, 2011, when Charles Schwartzel won it, how he would respond, and McIlroy came back, and he crushed it.
Nicholson had a collapse once.
In the U.S. Open, wing foot.
And there was that British Open collapse by, it was Jean
Vandeveld. And he's come back and he's won six majors.
Well, he hasn't.
What was it, Vandeveld?
I think so.
1999.
Yeah, that was
Jackie
the worst.
Bears.
That was the worst,
yeah,
I've ever seen.
Because that was number 18 and he had a huge lead. But this is something else for a guy who doesn't really, to me anyway, remind me of Tiger Woods in the way that he plays. And it's odd because scoring wise, it is dominant. He tied Tiger Woods' 1997 record last year. But he's just so consistent. And I wasn't really around at all for Nicklaus's, you know, peak. But it strikes me as the same. It's just kind of like it's just rock solid. So to see an implosion from a guy who's just, you would think that Tiger would have more implosion in him. This perhaps is, you know, historical, you know, just renovating history, I suppose, because maybe Tiger didn't have the blow-ups in him. But to see that just out of absolutely nowhere, that blow-up, I wonder how it will affect him.
Well, as the old skipper would say, Tim, buh. Men, not machines.
Nice. Very
nice,
sir.
And golf, I mean, you're alone. You're standing there alone. You're experiencing a collapse. You're not part of a team. You're not. You can go in the dugout. And, you know, you're walking. Everyone's looking at you. I mean, I can't imagine what that must feel like.
As we watch, we just assume that these guys are so darn good and they're such machines that they're fully confident, will always hit a good shot next. And, you know, below the surface, they may just be in a panic at times. You don't know. How could you get more pressure than playing golf on the 18th at the Masters, the final day of the Masters?
What's more pressure? We're saying like bases loaded, 3-2 count, you're the pitcher on the mound, or, you know, in a World Series game.
Golf,
or a deciding
because it's all on you.
Golf?
Pitcher, you can make a bad pitch. He still might hit the ball right at somebody, and you're out of it.
Jordan Spieth was asked after the round by, I believe it was Tom Rinaldi of ESPN, you know, externally we could see what was going on, of course, but what was that like internally when that was taking place? And here is what he had to say. It's the number one soundbite voice.
Hit the lever, Plowsy.
Plowsy.
Hit the lever, Plowsy.
Plowsy.
So when you have the perspective of some time, are you going to be pleased that you were right back in the thick of things one more time, your record here, a win and two runner-up finishes, or disappointed that you weren't able to get it across the finish line?
Pretty sure I'll be disappointed with that one. There's, you know, we still have the confidence that we're a closing team. We can close. I have no doubt about that ability. I just think it was a very tough 30 minutes for me that hopefully I never experience again.
That was a different soundbite, but that was Bill McAtee on CBS's coverage. Let's replay the question so people can hear it, because I couldn't believe it was asked, actually.
So when you have the perspective of some time, are you going to be pleased that you were right back in the thick of things one more time, your record here, a win and two runner-up finishes, or disappointed that you weren't able to get it across the finish line?
There it is. I couldn't believe it. I really couldn't. And I usually try to stray from hot take on media type crap. But, I mean, Bill, because you never know, and sometimes it's, you know, somebody who's 28 and on the air just because they look good. But, you know, I mean, Bill McAtee has been doing this, I think, probably since the 80s. That was a hack, man. I mean, are you for real? That's one of the worst collapses in golf history. Are you going to look back and be pleased on that? And I guess Spieth is getting killed. Of course, everybody gets killed on social media for the manner with which he handled himself yesterday, which is it's very sincerely, I'm really surprised by that, considering that was probably the low point of his, at the very least, professional career. I can't speak to his
life. What did he do that they were upset with?
As he was walking off 18, and there's a long walk between 18 and where you sign your scorecard, and the camera followed, probably for a good minute. It's still, he still probably had another minute to get to wherever they signed the scorecard. And he said, "Guys, not now, not in my face." You know, he didn't say it like screaming or anything like that. And then he didn't smile in Butler Cabin when he put the, which was one of the worst things, when he, I mean, just in general, that he had to put the, you know, Nick Faldo got the green jacket in 1995, I think from Olathabal. I could be wrong on that. But either way, it wasn't Greg Norman putting the green jacket on Nick Faldo after his collapse. Jordan Spieth had to go in there and put the jacket on Danny Willett after his collapse, but he wasn't like scowling or anything like that. He just had a look of a blank look on his face. He shook his hand.
And he gave a little. He did try to give a little smile once he put it on.
He had to do it again on the green. They do it again on the green. The comments he made were, you know. I just, you know, it's odd to me. You know, like I have guys in their 40s, like I'm disappointed in Jordan Spieth. He needs to grow up. And I'm sitting there thinking, are you lacking the self-awareness that you're a 40-something man attacking somebody for not having any class and to tell them to grow up on social media and the irony of the whole thing? But that's my master's thesis, I think, is the irony of lack of self-awareness on Twitter. But nonetheless, what Spieth did and how he conducted himself, considering that was, you know, had to be the low point of his professional career, to me, is admirable. But I guess he was getting his balls busted for the way he conducted himself, which, honestly, I'm really surprised. But, you know, maybe I'm missing something.
You talk about how consistent he is. He's never dealt with something like this on the biggest stage in golf. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of stuff going through his head. You know, there's a lot of emotion. I can't imagine people would kill him. It seemed like he was trying. He just had gone through a meat grinder, you know?
If you had played that way and lost a $100 bet at Forest Park, you'd be upset right when it was over, much less having the Masters within your grasp and to not have it taken away from you, but to blow it yourself. I mean, tough moment. That's a low moment in any golfer's career, I would think.
Let's break it down to, and we'll workshop it for a minute, like our own lives. Like, let's say you did a live, have you ever done a live shot that went awry, technically,
sure,
or something?
Absolutely.
Okay?
Yeah.
And you're not happy about it.
No.
You're still trying to figure out what happened.
That's
and
right.
Was a roll cue off, whatever. And then a camera's right in your face as you're walking out of the studio. You'd be like, not now, guys.
You probably would. Yep.
Here is Spieth. This is soundbite number one on the list of the sheet that I was given.
that was passive-aggressive right there.
Just, I don't know how else to make sure that I call for the right sound. When he was asked what it was like, what he was experiencing internally when this was taking place on number 12.
Hit the labor plow, Zane.
I can't imagine that was fun for anyone to experience other than maybe Danny's team and those who are fans of him. It was at one point I told Mike, I said, you know, buddy, it seems like we're collapsing. And, you know, I wanted to be brutally honest with the way I felt towards him so that he could then respond with what is necessary to get us to rebound, and he did. And we rebounded. I hit a great drive. I hit a good 7-iron. I got a tough break, and I made 2 birdies coming in and almost made a couple more. But, boy, you wonder about not only just the tee shot on 12, but why can't you just control the second shot, you know, and make five at worst, and you're still tied for the lead. So big picture, this one will hurt. It'll take a while.
He will not be playing for a while, he said. And, yeah, that was the soundbite. You were referencing the cat. Mike is he's making reference to his caddy, and he wanted honest psychoanalysis, I guess, and that's why he went to him for that. And he talked him up, and he was able to birdie 13 right after that catastrophe. He was able to birdie 15 and was in position to birdie 16, a hole that was aced three times yesterday, yeah. By the way. How about that? And if he had hit it just a little bit to the right, it would have taken potentially the same path that we saw the three aces go down. Davis Love the third with one of them. Oosthuizen had one where it hit another ball, J.B. Holmes' ball, and then bounced in. But he was a little past that, and it didn't check up and rolled a little far, and it's a tough putt. They were saying it's very fast downhill back, and he missed that. And at that point, the only way he's going to get in, at that point, Willett's in at 5-under, the only way he's going to get there is if he birdies 17 and 18, which are, you know, absurdly difficult to do. So when he hit it in the bunker on 17 and then wasn't able to, you know, hole it out from the sand, that was it. Willett was able to celebrate. And here's a guy in Willett who, you know, he did win the Masters, but unfortunately for him, he will not be known necessarily as the guy who won the Masters. It will be the Masters in 2016 that Jordan Spieth lost.
Well, Willett's the guy I picked right from the start.
I don't remember you mentioning that.
We can go back and check.
No, you passed me a note.
We can check the tape because I think I said it loud and clear on this show that you know, Spieth is a pretty good player and all, but Danny Willett is the guy that I'm going to have my eye on throughout this Masters. Sure enough, there he is at the top of the leaderboard.
That's the dividend of watching a lot of tape like mm-hmm. you do.
If I was Spieth's psychiatrist, I wouldn't want him to sit and not play for weeks on time at end. Maybe take 1 week off and then get back on the horse. You don't want to dwell on this forever because until he plays again, that's what he's going to be thinking about. And he did bounce back right after it and played pretty well the last few holes. I would tell him, take a week, get rid of this, and then go. Full speed ahead right after that. Because the more he sits and thinks about it, the more frustrated he's going to get, the more he's going to be overcome with self-doubt. He needs to play.
And Smiley Kaufman.
He's got another Smiley Kaufman. I had him as – I thought he'd finish second.
I actually did have Smiley Kaufman all over my DraftKings team just because he was super cheap.
Good name, too.
He had a great name.
No.
And his brother, Lucky.
Lucky and Smiley?
Yeah.
Don't they have a discount furniture place somewhere on Cherokee Street?
Somebody will
check on that.
If you're willing to, right, you're in the clubhouse, you think you have – that's probably a good way to do it. You're not going through the emotional meat grinder on the course. I'm sure internally you are back in the clubhouse or wherever he was.
You're talking about Willett?
Yeah. That's a pretty smooth way to win the match.
Not have to make a putt knowing that this is for all the marbles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that was the advantage. That's why I really like the chances of Jason Day and Rory McIlroy, who are never able to get it going, because they have the talent, and it was going in. You know you got to go balls to the wall. They've already had success. They've already won majors. Day with the PGA last year, and he's the number one player in the world. McIlroy with multiple majors. And they could go balls to the wall, whereas Kaufman's a young kid. I mean, he's 2 years older than Spieth. Call him young kid. He's 2 years older than Spieth, who was in the final group in his first Masters. I felt like that would be conducive to those guys going balls to the wall and being able to convert some scoring opportunities, and they really weren't. It was Willett who did, to his credit. He shot a 67. But again, unfortunately for him and for fans of Jordan Spieth, which I consider myself to be, it will be remembered as the Masters that Spieth gave away. The question for me is, how will Spieth perform? I think they're at Oakmont for the U.S. Open and going forward. And if I had to guess, this is going to be a battle for him. But I think he'll be back. He relies on his putting. And, of course, that's such a mental element. I'm anxious to see how he responds. This is the 7 o'clock hour. Sponsored by Acorns Golf Links, online at acornsgolflinks.com. The weather is going to be perfect this week once we get past today, and you can get out to Acorns and enjoy some golf at acornsgolflinks.com. The Blues will open up the 2016 Stanley Cup playoffs in St. Louis at 8:30, more like 8:45, on Wednesday night.
That's a little late.
Yeah, this happens every year, and I forget about it each year.
I do, too.
And it's not limited to St. Louis. It's not an anti-St. Louis agenda. Minnesota and Dallas will be dealing with it on Thursday night. Those are two central time zone teams. It's just the way that it is. Unfortunately, the Friday game is a 7 o'clock game, and the Sunday game in Chicago is a 2 p.m. game, and then we go back to an 8:30 start, 8:45. On Tuesday in Chicago.
On a school night.
Yeah, Thursday the 21st back in St. Louis for game five. If it gets there. Doug, you're calling for an Ed Belfour breaking his stick after a sweep.
I could see a Blues sweep here. Sure. I was puzzled by the way they played on Friday night. I didn't see that.
You mean Saturday night, right? Against the Capitals?
I did not see that coming.
I felt like that got glossed over. And I was discussing it with some of the people on our fan page yesterday. And maybe I'm missing something, and I did watch, you know, the first two periods, and then Ken Hitchcock kind of said, all right, we're down 4-1. The Predators and Stars are tied at this point. A miracle's going to have to happen in two different buildings in order for the Blues to win the Central. So he pulled Elliott, made sure he didn't get hurt, and brought in Nilsson. But there wasn't a more important game all year long than the 82nd game with the Central Division title on the line, with the ability to avoid the Blackhawks, and with the ability to get the number one seed in the Western Conference throughout the playoffs. And they had only their second game of the year out of 82 in which they lost by four goals or more. They lost in late February in Nashville 5-0. And that's odd to me. And I'm not going to hold them accountable and scream and yell. I don't know. I mean, it was very surprising to me earlier in the day, by the way, that I saw that Washington was going to dress their standard roster when they had nothing to play for, at least in the standings. They wanted to get Ovechkin 50. Got it. Wanted to get Holtby the win, the tie Brodeur. They got it. But they had lost three in a row because they had clinched the President's Trophy. They were so far ahead of everybody a couple of weeks earlier. I was just really surprised by that, but even more surprised by the fact that the Blues go up 1-0 and then wind up losing that game 5-1. And before, you know, he kind of called off the dogs, they were down 4-1. That's really surprising and, from my standpoint, really disappointing.
Because
The Stars were down 2-0. So it wasn't like you're watching Dallas and going, oh, they're up 2-0. It's not going to happen. They were down 2-0. So for the first two periods, there was a legitimate chance of really winning this thing. And by this thing, I mean the Central, the number one seed, and taking on the only team in the West that I think most people view as the team that doesn't have a shot, and that's the Minnesota Wild.
I guess the only way you reason that away is the fact that you were playing the best team in the league. They just put up 120 points. And the Hall of Famer had a big night. They left him alone a lot. He had an awful lot of good looks at the net. That was the troubling thing. But Washington is an awfully good team, and I'm sure they got pumped up a little bit by the chance to spoil the Blues' chance here at home to win the Western Conference, thinking that maybe we're going to see this team down the road. I don't know, so let's go out and win this. Because they sure played a whole lot better than the Blues did.
I don't know what their mindset – the Capitals. I just know that if you're heading into the playoffs, you want to do so with a little momentum. A lot of, you know, hot teams do well. You don't want to have a great season and then cool off at the wrong time.
Yeah.
So they played like it was for keeps. And I was shocked by the outcome. I mean, you get the Blackhawks. The Blues just had a huge win. I mean, signature win against the Blackhawks. And you wonder, all right, maybe that's in the Blackhawks' kitchen.
Yeah,
right
in
now.
A span of 48 hours, I would argue they had their best win of the year and their worst loss of the year.
Yeah.
Here is what Ken Hitchcock had to say on the key to beating the Blackhawks.
Hit the labor palsy.
They're the only team in the league, quite frankly, with the knowledge of what it takes. And so we get first crack at them. We're going to have number one is our best players are going to have to be our best players in the series. Our best players are going to have to outplay their best players. And that's going to have to be... number one for me, and I think that's a big challenge, and I think a lot of our guys are looking forward to that.
Ken Hitchcock on the key to beating the Blackhawks. They will be without Duncan Keith on Wednesday night. Got to take advantage of that. The Blackhawks' depth on defense, without question, one of their strengths amongst many, but an opportunity for the Blues as they take pride in rolling out four lines and just keep coming at you, keep coming at you, keep coming at you.
And the Blues will get Backes back.
You would think that would be the case, yes.
To me, you know, I know he...
Fabry back on Saturday, that would be good.
The because Backes, first of all, his presence standing in front of the goal, no one does it like him on the Blues, that particular role. And he's a really good defensive player, which I don't think he gets enough credit for.
Mm-hmm. Well, they hit the playoffs as healthy as they've been all year, assuming Backes is back. I don't know that they've had a time all year when they've had virtually all their skaters. They won't have Allen, I guess. But all their skaters together at the same time. I don't know that that's happened all season. But that first game, I think, is crucial. Because if they get beat in the first game, I think there's going to be a whole lot of, uh-oh, here we go again, in their minds. So I think they really do need a strong first game on Wednesday.
Guys, Vladdy and his old buddy Oshie were partying at Palmano's on Friday. Thanks. That's from a fan of Frank. At Paulie Botto's. At Paulie Botto's.
I hear the veal is the best in the city.
That's the lamb. It's the lamb, baby. It's the lamb.
I thought you called Lamba.
It is. I just said Lamba. Oh, that's lamba. Proper pronunciation. That's what happens if you're Jesuit educated.
I don't want to eat a Lamba. I don't. They seem so nice and sweet.
Let's see what we got here. Guys, nine shots on goal, 36 minutes into the game. Ain't going to get it done, yo. That's from Stubby Applause.
Yeah.
Just odd.
It was odd. I mean, you have those games from time to time.
Happen to have them in the most important game you play all year.
I don't know.
And it just, I don't know. Odd.
You certainly thought that you'd have a different result than that. But, I mean, that was it's a great team that they played. Washington has just had a fantastic season.
All right, but, I mean, if they want to win a cup, they might have to beat that team. So let's not pretend like they're unbeatable.
No, but if you win a cup, you're going to lose some games along the way, too.
Yeah,
probably
not
bad
again,
doing it.
The style that the Blues play makes it highly unlikely that they get their asses beat like that. And as I said, they played 81 games going into that game, and they had only lost by four goals or more one time. And that was in Nashville in late February. And here's the most important game of the year with the Central, with the Western Conference number one seed throughout, and with the chance to play the Wild instead of the Blackhawks in the first round. And that's what they did.
I think what you're saying is they didn't have any buy-in.
I don't know what the hell. Here's what Hitchcock had to say on the team's performance / effort against the Capitals on Saturday night.
Leaper plows, he hit it.
You know, like I said, as a coach, when you're in this thing, there's a lot of things you can control during the season. But when you get at this stage, you can't control that. Mm-hmm. You can a little bit, but not as much as you'd like. And you know, got a team that was on edge because they had lost a few games and they played really well. And when we don't make an investment in our game, this is what it looks like. So we'll be ready for Wednesday.
They didn't invest in their game.
You like that? Is that the same as a buy-in?
I think it's very similar. The goals that Ovechkin scored, he was really wide open.
That's a guy you want to leave on.
Well, probably not him.
But that's weird because that's one of the things the Blues do as well as any team. They don't give opponents any space to work with. I mean, they're aggressive defensively, so I was surprised by that as well. The thing is, when I think of bad Blues losses this year where it looks like, okay, they might be going off the tracks, they do get it back together quickly. I give Hitchcock a lot of credit for that.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure when they take the ice on Wednesday night, that game Saturday, that'll be the last thing
skate.
On their minds. It won't have an effect.
Skate, boys, skate. Oh, that building will be jumping on Wednesday.
And the Brewers are in town.
Yep.
They got a good ball club.
They actually are 3-3. Nobody in the Central's below .500.
They got
those
a good
Reds.
Those
out.
Reds, 5-1.
Look out.
Beware the Red.
Yeah. I can't think it's going to last, especially with the Brewers. They got a good ball club. But I don't think they're going to hold up over the
Cubs season. Are doing some raking.
You know, that's the one that you expected. Obviously, the Pirates are going to be pretty good. I don't look for that Braves club to be there in October.
I'm not sold on the Pirates. I agree with you on the Braves, though. That's a nice take.
Mm-hmm. The team I think that's probably going to have the best record in the league is the Mets. Because when you've got the best pitching, and they do, that'll usually carry you. And they've got some dynamite arms.
They really do.
And all those guys are on the upward trend in their careers, too. Harvey, Syndergaard.
But it is, I mean, if we can make fun of the Braves, and I was the first to do that. Not exactly playing at the highest level right now, I'm sure.
Well,
as the season progresses, they'll lock it in. But to be able to, I mean, the way the season started for the Cards, 0-3, to get three wins in Atlanta, yeah, it wasn't pretty. Yeah, they certainly got some help doing it. But they also got some big hits when they needed some guys that, you didn't know were coming. Here's all of a sudden Hazel Baker, Diaz looks great. And they got three. They're 500 back in St. Louis.
Here's the thing that, you know, from a real positive standpoint, that you would have to consider surprises. I don't know how many people even knew the name Hazel Baker 5 weeks ago.
Tim, I said early in spring training that the guy to look for on the Redbirds was this Hazel Baker.
You did. I remember that. And you said, how come Hazel Baker's not at the picnic table every day?
I liked him from the first time I saw him.
But he is, not only is he performing, Mike Matheny is buying in himself. Buying is the official theme of the Acorns Golf Links 7 o'clock hour. Mm-hmm. He's hitting second. And I'll be curious, did you have any idea, did they put the starting lineup out early for a home opener? I don't know. I guess not.
I don't know.
To put you on the spot. Would you imagine he'll be starting lineup today? He's hitting second yesterday. He's hitting 400 so far.
I wouldn't mess with
it. Home runs.
You know what? Because here's the thing. Like, okay, he's hitting, which is great. And we've seen, you know, guys early on hit in their, you know, out of the blue where you didn't expect it. But very good defensively. And he's doing, like, he stole a base. He's taken extra bases. He's given them, because he's a really, he has power, but he's also fast. And so he gives them another dimension. He's not just a guy that's hitting well. He's pretty much doing everything.
We will rally around Jeremy Hazel Baker, and we will play good baseball.
Nice. Real nice. Dixie, 1999, August of 1999, sir.
You know what concerns me a little bit, though, about all the games so far? Because I thought, all right, maybe early on it might be an offensive struggle. I didn't think that the team would be the top offensive team in the National League, but I thought that they would get great starting pitching, and we haven't really seen that. And now Wainwright has two starts where he's questioning his command, and yesterday he was, you know, pretty candid how frustrated he was with not being able to lock it in. Still feels like he's close and he can get it done. But we haven't seen great starting pitching, although Martinez looked good in his start.
Yeah. Well, as I said last week at this time, I expected him to lose the first three in Pittsburgh and then probably sweep down in Atlanta.
I don't remember
and
you saying that.
You know, that's exactly what we saw. The surprising thing to me is that Grichuk has been benched for three of the first six games. This is a guy who had a big spring, started as a number four hitter. They're counting on 30 home runs and 80 or 90 RBIs, and he's on the bench.
Well, I
and
think
it looks like he may be there for a while.
Well, I think Hazel Baker has played so well. Matheny wants to go with the hot hand. Now, yesterday, Grichuk walked a couple of times, stole a base. Maybe that's the thing that gets him going. He told me on the off day he was taking more BP than he ever has, just trying to get it. He said it's all mental. He said, what I'm going through right now is mental, and he just worked his tail off. He said he took maybe five times more swings in the indoor cage than he ever has taken before. Hopefully once he gets back in there, because they're going to need him if they want to
big time
get to where they're going.
Yeah. It is the Acorns Golf Link 7 o'clock hour here on the Ryan Kelly Morning After. Beautiful weather this week once we get past today. Make sure you're playing golf at Acorns Golf, the sponsor of the 7 o'clock hour on the Ryan Kelly Morning After. As we are on the road today, the Gateway Buick GMC Studios at Llewellyn's in Soulard. Frank Cusimano will be broadcasting the Hollywood Casino Press Box from here, and the boys from the Riders Block will be here as well from 12 to 2. Come on down and make sure, somebody just texted in, the cheapest parking around Busch Stadium is $40. Why not park for free over here at Llewellyn's, have some beverages, have the delicious burger and fries, and then take the Llewellyn's trolley to Busch Stadium for today's Cardinal home opener. I was getting to this, and I want to make sure that I do bring it up. You brought up one of the points I was going to make, the cat, which is Wainwright. That's concerning. There's no other way around it. I'm sure there'll be spin, and Wainwright speaks with great confidence. That's how he's always done it. Most of the time he's able to back it up, but there's no way around it. If Drew Stubbs is hitting balls dead center, raking on you like that, as Wainwright said himself, I'm leaving balls out over the plate, and major league hitters are going to connect with those. That's a concern, because that's two average to below average starts and bad for Adam Wainwright's standard. Encouraging, majorly encouraging, is Carlos Martinez, and I'm not just focusing on Saturday night, but overall his spring. That was one of the reasons why going into this year I was just saying I just don't think the Cardinals are an 88-win team, because I don't expect Martinez to be able to perform throughout the course of the year, because he's coming off of getting shut down with his shoulder. If he can, game changer. Two things that I did expect that are playing out, and I guess you could include a third in there, but really two that I focused on that are playing out, Matt Holliday and Yadier Molina can't hit, and it's nothing personal. They both have had great careers, and you know Molina will continue to do so behind the plate, but the power just isn't there. And if you have one hit in three, you know, it's just not conducive to maximizing the output from your lineup. But I don't know when it's going to change. We've seen this for the 5 years Mike Matheny's been Cardinal manager. He has his guys, and he doesn't mess with it, but I just disagree with that. And Yadier Molina, you know, he's going to get base hits, but it's going to be like, you know, it's the proverbial good piece of hitting. I'm going to flare it to the opposite field.
Right. Nice.
That's what he's got
nice
left.
Nice piece of hitting.
So in order to make up for that, which is another reason why I was down on the team's chances and the probability of being over 87.5 wins going into the year, you have to have people out of nowhere emerge. Now, the odds on people wouldn't necessarily be considered out of nowhere in Randall Grichuk or Stephen Piscotty, but Diaz and Hazelbaker most definitely would be considered out of nowhere. And you're getting huge performances so far. Granted, 1 week of baseball, but huge performances from those guys. And when you see them up to bat, personally at this point, I feel more confident in those guys than I do Holliday or Molina. And I know it might be blasphemy in St. Louis, but that's how I feel at this point. It's because those guys just at this point, Holliday's a line drive guy, and I just don't think that's a number three hitter. He lowered Molina in the lineup in Atlanta, but he had him hitting fifth in Pittsburgh. That's just, you know, I just don't get it. But I, you know, whatever, I'm kind of used to it now. And it's similar to Wainwright and Waka. I hate that Waka's starting today because it's the home opener, and of course you want to see the Cardinals win the home opener, but he's the guy out of the five I have the least faith in at this point. But, you know, Martinez and Garcia, I do feel good about. They're just majorly leveraged from a health standpoint, in particular Garcia, because of his history, and in Martinez, in my mind, coming off a shoulder. But if they both can be healthy throughout the course of the year, game changer.
I think it's early to give up on Holliday.
Holliday. He's not a power hitter anymore. That's what I'm saying. He shouldn't be hitting third. My point's clear.
I think he's going to – I mean, if you look at traditionally, he gets most of his home runs in the second half in terms of power, but he's good on base. He drives and runs. Hopefully he'll get back to that. I agree with you about Diaz. The ball jumps off his bat more than I remember seeing when I saw him at spring training, and he showed me something on the base pad. Like, he's faster than I thought he was. Made a great defensive play. I'm excited to see him. And with Yadi – offensively, you take what you get. I understand what you're saying about positioning in the lineup, but that guy behind the plate, you got to have him there.
I like Diaz from the first time I saw him play down in Cuba as a kid.
You saw him in Cuba?
Yeah, I saw quite a bit of him.
How'd you get there?
Well, I snuck in.
Okay.
And I let the Cardinals know what I saw, and, you know, hence they signed him to a big contract. So, yeah, I think he looks like a real player.
Because I remember when he came to their spring training complex and they worked him out in one of the back fields, and there was a guy in, like, a big floppy hat seeming like he didn't want his identity to be revealed. Was that you?
I'm not saying it was. I'm not saying it wasn't. I just know that I liked him.
So you orchestrated that.
Matheny has always been a guy with a different lineup every day, and I think that's probably what we're going to see this year, too, now that you throw Hazelbaker into the mix, and Diaz and Jerko may be interchangeable at some level, and Grichuk, when he gets hot, I'm sure he'll be in the middle of the lineup. He'll be on the bench one day and then in the middle of the lineup the next. I think it's going to be a season where you flip a coin and not have any idea what kind of lineup you're going to see day to day.
And it is true with Grichuk. You go through a stretch like he's gone through in July, no one even really notices it, but you start the season that way. He said, you know, that's what your value is right now, and it gets in your head a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But he's too good to not straighten it out, I think.
Yeah. Hopefully Waka as well. Too good to not straighten it out.
Nobody thinks Molina isn't valuable behind the plate, but he's out of place batting any higher than number seven. Just admit it and move on, you rights holder.
Didn't I exactly say that?
The over-under was 749 on the first rights holder, and it happened at 748.
Didn't I say I understand about his position in the lineup?
I did hear you say that,
yeah.
But I'm not under an overpass. Yeah. Let's see. I hope Diaz uses Call Me Al as his walk-up music. Doug, do you think he will?
Hum a few bars of that for me, Tim.
What
man
year was that,
1988? I had a short little bit. The rest of my life is so hard.
Paul
Simon
and Chevy Chase was in the video.
It would be nice if we could call him Al. Ledmus is kind of hard, but, you know.
Why don't you go up to him today and...
I'm not going to. It's his name. I'm sure he likes it. This is different.
Six games in and the cat is in full apologist mode. Boy, it comes in quicker these days. I feel like my emails are reminiscent of Grichik. I'm better than this, and I'll get things on the right track. Thanks. That's a Crestwood Coyote saying that he's had an off period. Have you noticed his emails have been off lately?
I haven't really noticed I don't study the emails a lot.
It was like 12 minutes ago, I think, one of the first things I said, I was concerned about the starting pitching. I think I pointed that out.
Why can't you ever see any problems with the club?
I was surprised by Leek's performance. That caught me off guard.
Because he looks so
great in spring.
In control in spring.
Right.
I can tell you, though, that even when they were 0-3, they got enough veteran guys in there where, you know, they weren't getting tight. They just felt like sometimes you start the season that way. And then you go to Atlanta and you polish off a really competitive ball club.
Right. If they had just won one of those games in Pittsburgh. And
two of the three were.
And they were up kind for of grabs, there. And you come back 4-2, sure. You'd say, all right, off to a nice start. Just the fact that getting swept to start a series, a season, feels bad.
But it's more of a, I mean, the record, even if they would have been 2-4, you know, I mean, I understand, I wouldn't chastise people for being high if they were 4-2 or 5-1, or low if they were 1-5 or 2-4. But, you know, just looking at the performances and the trends, that's where I'm coming from on this stuff. Wainwright has two starts that are odd, the velocity, odd, the location, not where he usually is. And Waka, unfortunately, had a bad spring with a final really good start in spring, but then a bad start in Pittsburgh, and it carries over from what took place in the second half last year. Not the second half, but like the final 6 weeks of the season, and then a start in the playoffs in Chicago. So that's where I'm coming from on that. And then offensively, listen, I think Matt Holliday hitting even two or six, I'm all over that. But hitting three for a team that I think is going to most likely be offensively challenged, I just don't think at this point in his career for who he is offensively, it makes sense. That's right. He had four home runs last year. Same thing with Yadier Molina. That's my premise. I'm incredibly grateful for what he's been able to do since coming over here at the trade deadline in 2009. But you also have to analyze what you actually have, and things change as players age.
One of the things I think is interesting now, the hot topic during spring training, Matt Carpenter should not be hitting leadoff, and now I think everyone is like, okay. I mean, his take was...
Based on last year, he's the only guy that really profiles as a number three hitter on the team.
Well, he said until someone, and he wasn't calling anyone out, he said, I think based on what I do as a leadoff hitter, which is an important position, I should be leadoff hitter until someone else is ready to grab it. And I don't think we're seeing that right now. So Matt Carpenter is your leadoff hitter, and I don't hear... maybe there are other more pressing concerns, but I don't hear a lot of people saying he shouldn't be.
Doug, check this out. No. Where are all the anti-Matt Carpenter leadoff haters now?
Oh, I don't know. You know, over the last year and a half, he's the best hitter they have. And usually the best hitter you have hits third.
Well, why don't
Nobody's disrespecting him because they say he shouldn't be leadoff. They're saying, wait a minute, you're so good. You got the most power on the team right now. Maybe you ought to hit in the middle of the line when there's some guys on base.
Well, listen, Mr. Man, why don't you put on your little red KMOV pullover, head down to the ball yard later, instead of being on the outside, go right into Mike Matheny's office and tell him what's what.
Well, Carpenter likes to hit at number one. Who wouldn't? It's a fun place to hit. I'm sure he's going to get the most at-bats. He's confident there. Let it rip.
He said he's confident hitting anywhere. He said, when they dropped me down, it was a small sample size. The numbers weren't as good. Doesn't affect my confidence. He said, if I were Mike, based on the importance of leadoff right now, this is how I would handle it. He wasn't coming to, this is more comfortable for me to be the leadoff hitter. He's coming from, I think this is best for the team.
Well, we are a fan base and a media in St. Louis that stresses out over every Cardinal lineup that comes out.
True.
And analyze it and beat it to death. And I think the reality is it'll probably be different every day of the season. Carpenter probably the one guy who will stay put.
Doug, I don't know if you agree with this. Sometimes a slumping ball club just needs fine dining from the Varsity in Atlanta to get things going. Oh, thanks, God. Eric, in the Central West End. And that's your place you like to go.
Oh, God, it's awful. It's like their signature fast food place. They got pictures all over the wall. Presidents and celebrities have eaten it.
And Otis Nixon.
It's like eating dog food. It was some of the worst food I've ever had in my life. It's just terrible.
But it turned the Cardinals' season around.
I doubt any of them made it to varsity. I bet not one of them went to the varsity.
You know, Hazel Nager did.
You know, it's nice when someone in your office says, hey, they have this new thing in Atlanta. Please try it for me. It's a burger pizza. They called it pizza burger.
Nice.
I don't know what they called it. I think they called it actually burgerizza. Okay,
right.
So I had someone go pick it up for me. I said, here's some money. I will try it for this guy. And it was awful, and it was $26.
Oh, jeez.
$26.
Good value.
Did you eat it any, did you eat it any nice places in Atlanta?
No.
No?
No.
Well, why not? Because you work all afternoon and night. And
well, there was an off day, so I went to dinner right around the hotel, a nice place, but I didn't, you know, it was fine.
At least have a nice lunch, though, and then you eat at the ballpark.
I don't eat a lunch. I eat at the ballpark.
You can say whatever you want about the varsity, but do they have meatball cones? Thanks. That's from the 314. Doug, you're going to get a meatball cone today and just salad.
That's an ice cream cone with meatballs jammed
into
it?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, God, no.
It's making its debut today at Busch Stadium.
No, I will not have that. I will not eat that. Will you eat that? I like meatballs.
Grassi's has great meatballs.
Grassi's has great meatballs. But I don't really want meatballs at the ballpark.
Hey, Doug, I'm sitting out in the cold rain waiting for tickets. If I come to Llewellyn's, will you warm me up with your tongue?
No,
sir. That's from the 314.
Wait a minute. Let me get my suspension log.
Oh, there it is. I've missed that.
Who was it, Tim?
It just says 314.
314 has been suspended. He's been suspended a period of 2 days' time, and his name just now went into the Ragazzi's handsome leather-bound suspension log.
I got to meet the fine folks from Get Tinted.
Spencer?
Atlanta. Yeah.
Spencer's good peeps.
Yeah, but he wants you to read the new intro, though.
Seamaster, what's the new Get Tinted STL? I might get my...
Tinty, so you don't squinty.
Doug, how do you like that?
He likes that. He said Tim doesn't read that.
Well, it's because I wasn't aware of it, but now that I am.
Well, that's a Seymour thing.
No, I don't blame Seymour. I got to look at it. Check this out, Doug. Let me give you a little hinty, the tinty, so you don't have to squinty.
Perfect. That's what we work on.
Check them out at gettintedstl.com or call 314-406-8489. Good thing you ran into him. Otherwise, I would have never said it. Yeah. So Spencer can now write that trip to Atlanta off. Because it helped his business. JHE helping out another local business. We got a break. Tim McCarver is going to join us on that Get Tinted STL Captain's Log at 8 o'clock. Then we have Derek Gould at 8:30. Doug Armstrong, the Blues GM at 9 o'clock. Your emails the morning after at InsideSTL.com. We are living in a Cucky the Dwarf era, and I'm anxious to see what he has at 9:45. A $20 gift certificate to Llewellyn's Pub is the prize. That's where we're broadcasting today in Soulard. Come on by for your opening day festivities in St. Louis. This is the Ryan Kelly Morning After on CBS Sports 105.7 HD2 FM 920 AM and InsideSTL.com live from the Gateway Buick GMC Studios on the road today at Llewellyn's Pub in Soulard.